I want to talk to you this morning about, we've been talking about leadership, led to lead, and so I want to talk to you about a leadership void, and I have a specific purpose in doing this because we have been in the process of beginning a ministry here, and it's kind of taken a little longer than what we wanted, but it's all in God's timing, and so I want to talk to you about that, but I want to talk to you a little bit about leadership void. Our theme verse, and the theme verse for Fathers in the Field, is Isaiah 1:17. Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. One of the things that I've learned in the number of years that we've done Shadow Haven Ministries, and I've ministered to people who are recovering addicts, drug or alcohol, or other issues, is a large percentage of them grew up in homes where there was no father, or they did not have a healthy relationship with their father. And it's very difficult. One of the things that I've learned is it's very difficult to minister to someone who's in their 40s or 50s who have spent their entire life just surviving without the influence of a father and trying to bring change at that stage of life, because they've learned their survival skills. They've learned how to survive on the streets. They've learned how to get along. And so at that point, to say that, well, life can be better is rather difficult, because that's not what they know. So there's some scary numbers about being fatherless. Fatherlessness is really an epidemic in our country. Back in the 60s and maybe even 50s, when we began to move in that direction, and certainly in the 60s during the sexual revolution, there were a number of children that were being born out of wedlock who would not have a father growing up in the home. And of course, we know about Roe v. Wade taking place in 63, so allowing for women to abort their children. And back then, it was kind of embarrassing to be in that situation, but today not so much. It's pretty much widely accepted and practiced. 50% of this country's children, over 25 million kids under 18, are growing up in homes without their fathers. They have no fatherly influence. They're growing up without a dad. Our society would tell you that's okay. They would say that men are a bad influence on children and on society in general. But we see that Scripture teaches us to the contrary. 1.5 million children become fatherless and wounded each year. And so if father decides to leave the home and to leave the kids, they have a sense of abandonment. They lose their sense of self-worth, and they struggle throughout life. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes. 85% of all children who exhibit behavioral disorders come from fatherless homes. 75% of all adolescent patients in chemical abuse centers come from fatherless homes. As I was a counselor in a halfway house in a treatment center for people who were addicted to either drugs or alcohol, and since starting Shadow Haven Ministries, one of the common themes is growing up in a fatherless home, not knowing who your father was or knowing who he was, but he just was not present. And what we see is that many of those individuals actually end up repeating the cycle. They will themselves father children and not stay around to see them and to raise them. 71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. 70% of juveniles in state-operated institutions come from fatherless homes. And I believe it's 63, I left that out, 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. And so we can begin to see, we can see the effects. You can just look all this stuff up online. There may be varying statistics depending on who's doing the study, but you can look it up online and see that growing up without a father has a significant impact, negative impact on the life of the child. There are many men who are walking around and they would classify themselves as men, but they never learned how to be men from another man. They just learned on their own. And so perhaps they've developed some skills or some ideology about what it means to be a man, and it's not positive because there was no one there to teach them. There was no one there to guide them. There was no one there to show them what it was to be a husband, to be a man, to work and to earn your own keep, to pay your own way. But the good news is that God has a heart for the fatherless. There are several scriptures that I want to give you this morning with regard to that. First one is Deuteronomy 10:18. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. Now, the interesting thing is that when these scriptures were written, fatherlessness was not an epidemic. It wasn't the situation where the dad just chose not to be around. Usually it was because the father had died, maybe from disease or maybe from warfare or something like that. But anyways, these children were orphaned. We have orphan children now whose fathers just decided to take off, did not want to stay and assume the responsibility, found somebody else or another family that they thought that they could love better, and they took off. But nonetheless, God still has a heart for those without fathers. Psalm 82:3 says, defend the cause of the weak and fatherless, maintain the rights of the poor and the oppressed. Hosea 14:3, for in you the fatherless find compassion. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, encourage the oppressed, defend the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. James 1:27 says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. James 2:15-16 says, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it? And so very clearly we see that God has a heart for the fatherless, not just the fatherless, but the oppressed. That he has a heart for those who are misplaced, are displaced, who don't understand maybe who they are or where they came from. He has a heart for those who have suffered hardship, who maybe have suffered the loss of a husband. God has a heart for those types of people. And you say, well, what does this have to do with leadership? Well, remember in our last couple of messages, we talked about how leadership is nothing more than influence. If you have influence on someone, then you are a leader. It's not about a position. You can have the position of father and not have any influence on your kids. It's about influence. It's about instruction. It's about changing the way someone lives. And you say, well, I'm not a leader because I don't influence anyone. There's no one that I influence. Well, then you need to change that. You say, well, how do I change that? Well, you find a young boy, or you find a widow, or you find someone that is downtrodden, and you pray to God and ask God how you can influence their life for the better. Churches have failed in this regard. Why? Because we have allowed the state, we've allowed the government to step in and take over. And I don't know if you've noticed, but anything that the government touches becomes a mess. It becomes an albatross. Even though it's not working, nobody has the guts to pull the plug and say, this isn't working, let's try something new. What is the answer? The answer is to throw more money into it. And so what you'll see is you'll see these programs that aren't working, that aren't effective. And so what we do is we just try to throw more money into it. And all that the money, throwing money into it is just bankrupting the entire country. Pretty soon the whole country will be downtrodden, will be disadvantaged, will be homeless. You see, we don't do anything to correct it. And it largely sits with the church because the church hasn't done its job. We've just advocated that to the government and said, let the government fix it. And the government can't fix it. And the way they fix it is contrary to the word of God. They choose to do things that are contrary to the word of God. And so we have this huge mess. The reality is that the reason we are in the situation that we're in is because families, and particularly fathers, have chosen not to be fathers, not to be leaders. You see, it began to happen around the time of the Industrial Revolution, because before that, men were very present in the homes. Because why? They worked at home. They were farmers, or they had sawmills, or they had something set up in the backyard, or maybe they were blacksmiths or some kind of vocation, and they lived where they worked. And so the fathers were present. But then during the Industrial Revolution, when they began to have factories and all that, men and even children were taken out of the homes and put in these factories, and they began to work. And so men began to lose the influence on their own children, their own families. And fortunately, there have been women to step up and take the place, but that wasn't God's design. God's design was for the father to be the leader, for the father to be the spiritual leader. And so we've had these leadership voids, and it's just continuing to get worse. Because as I've said, we've had young boys grow up without fathers. And I'm not negating the influence that a father has on a daughter. We see that because men have abandoned their homes, their daughters have a tendency to be more promiscuous, looking for that fatherly love. And they usually seek for it in the wrong places. And so I'm not diminishing that at all. But the problem is that men have abandoned their post. And so we have these leadership voids. First of all, there is the parenting void. There is the parenting void. Parents don't parent. And so you see this cycle continue because you grew up and maybe your babysitter was the television set. You don't know how to parent. And so you have kids because it doesn't really take anything to have kids. You don't have to be a man or a woman to procreate. I mean that in the sense that it doesn't require any skill. It just happens. And so now you have women who haven't been parented becoming parents, and you have men who haven't been parented becoming parents, looking for things to do for their kids. And so thankfully, In 2007, we had the onset, the introduction of the cell phone. And so now kids get their parenting from the cell phone, and they get their education on sex and reproduction from the cell phone or from the computer because parents aren't doing it. Or we give it over to the school, and then all of a sudden we wonder why we're having all of these problems because we're expecting the teachers to parent our kids. And so there is this leadership void within the home. Secondly, there is a father void. We've talked about that quite a bit, where fatherlessness has severely affected and impacted our country and our nation. Boys growing up without dads. Boys becoming dads. And they learn to do what they saw. Hey, I don't have to stick around. I can take off. I can father children by many different women. I don't have to be responsible. And the reality is that those children whom we father are just going to continue the cycle because that's what they've learned. That's what they know. And unless somebody intervenes, unless somebody steps in, it's just going to continue. And what I found is that, you know, my heart has been for men and has been to try to help guys get back on their feet through Shadow Haven Ministries and other things. But to be honest with you, it is a struggle. It is a steep uphill battle. Because we're trying to, typically I haven't had men who were in their teens. We're talking about men in their 40s and in their 50s, who now we expect to change, and we can't change because they've spent so much time on the streets. They've spent so much time learning how to live that to come at that age and say, hey, it's time to change, is very difficult, extremely difficult. And so that's why I believe God has brought to us this ministry of Fathers in the Field, which is designed to minister to fatherless boys between the ages of 11 and 17. Or is it 7 and 17? Somewhere in there. 7, I think. Because maybe we can get ahead of it. Rather than being reactive, we can be proactive. And we can begin to influence these young boys while they're still impressionable, while the hurt is still fresh, while they're still wanting to learn, while they're still willing to hear from somebody. And to have somebody take them under their wing and to take them and teach them how to hunt or teach them how to fish or to fix cars and to show them what a man is. There is the father void. And then thirdly, there is the Christian education void. The Christian education void. You see, what happened, going back to the Industrial Revolution, I'm not finding fault with the church with regard to this, but what happened during the Industrial Revolution before they came up with child labor laws is they would take children and put them in factories and they would work to help support the family. So they weren't being educated. So some very wise individuals said, hey, let's educate these kids by having what is known as a Sunday school. Now, Sunday school, at its inception, was designed to do two things. Was to teach these kids how to read and write and do arithmetic, but to use the Bible as a curriculum. And so it was used as an evangelistic tool, but it was also used as an educational tool. Now, we don't use it as an educational tool. We use it to teach them Bible lessons. And so what has happened, what we have taught society is, if you want your child to grow up knowing something about your religion, something about God, something about the Bible, you send them to Sunday school, or you send them to VBS, or you send them to youth group, because parents now don't have to do that. It's not my responsibility. It's the church's responsibility. And so as a result of that, churches began to have programs. You know, we talk about the whole issue of, we've talked about women in ministry, and I've said this before, that when the scriptures were written, they had house churches, and they had pastors who would preach in these house churches. They didn't have a nursery ministry. They didn't have a Christian education ministry. They didn't have a women's ministry. They didn't have a men's ministry. They didn't have a youth ministry. They had church. All that other stuff was taken care of in the home. But nowadays, none of it's taken care of in the home. And so the expectation is the church is going to do it. And so churches begin to hire staff persons to do youth group, to do Sunday school, to do children's ministry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And churches have learned to do that so that they draw people in. And by drawing people in, they're drawing in giving units. Because, well, and we've had it here. We don't have a youth ministry. We don't have a children's ministry. So what happens? A person comes to the church, and I'm not saying this is bad, but I'm just stating this as a reality. A person comes to the church and says, oh, we love your service, we love the people, but where's your children's ministry? We don't have one. And so next thing we know, they're leaving, and they're going to some place that has a children's ministry. And churches have learned to do that. We have a dynamic youth ministry. And so they may... And they'll say we're trying to reach youth for Christ, teens for Christ. But let's take a look at the stats. The majority of teenagers who grew up in a church or grew up attending youth ministry will leave the faith when they get the age of college. So it's really not working. And why isn't it working? Because it's not reinforced in the home. It is not taught in the home. We have given up that responsibility of teaching our kids how to be good kids. We've given it over to the school, and we've given it over to the church. And the church can't do it. Think about it for a moment. Let's talk about screen time. Because that's, you know, everybody understands what screen time is. The average use per day, not including schoolwork or homework, for 8 to 12-year-olds is 4 hours and 44 minutes a day. 4 hours and 44 minutes, they're on cell phone or on their computer or playing video games or doing something. Between 13 and 18-year-olds, it's 7 hours and 22 minutes a day. So what are we doing, parents? We're allowing them to learn on their own. We're allowing some website to teach them. We're allowing some social media influencer to teach them, to be their leader. Why? Because it's easier. Who wants to deal with nagging kids? Yesterday, I took my daughter and my two grandkids. We went out to breakfast, and then we went to Bass Pro Shop. And I got to tell you, I love my grandkids. I love my daughter. I love, love, love being with those kids. I was exhausted. My two-year-old, everything she saw in the store, I want it. I want it. I want it. I took a piece of candy. I broke it in half. And I gave one half to one child. And guess which half the other child wanted, the one half that they had. I had a perfectly good half, but they didn't want that half. They wanted the one that he had, or they wanted the one that she had. It went both ways. It's tiring to be a parent. And so what we see is that, let's just entertain them. Let's give them a cell phone. Let's give them something. I understand that. We went through that with our kids. Hey, we want a minute of peace, so we'll turn on the TV and you can watch that. And there are times when that's okay. But it has gotten way out of hand. It's gotten way out of control. We don't parent anymore. So let me ask you this. So let's say we have a Sunday school program. We have a children's ministry. Good things. I wish we had one. I'd love to see a ton of kids running around the church. I would. But let me ask you a question. How long does the typical children's ministry program last? You can talk to me. It's okay. An hour to maybe an hour and a half. Why? Because that's how long the adult service is, right? Okay, so an hour to an hour and a half a week. Let's be generous. Let's say there's a midweek program and they come there for another hour and a half. So that's 3 hours a week versus 4 hours and 44 minutes every day. Who's got the greater influence? Whatever's on the screen. Whatever's on the tube. That has the greater influence. We can't compete with that. And so what needs to happen is parents need to fill the void and begin to lead in their own home. We hear today news stories of, and we see it anytime there's an instance of some kind of crime being committed. Now we always go back to what? The mental health crisis in the United States. The mental health crisis around the world. And they're beginning to see a connection. Various research studies suggest a connection between social media and symptoms of anxiety and depression. This is an attack on our kids. And so how is it manifesting itself? It is greatly impacting our young girls, our teenagers. The percentage of teenage girls that are experiencing anxiety and depression and so on is about 63%. So more than half of all teenage girls are experiencing some kind of anxiety or depression. They're suffering from low self-esteem. And they're seeing a direct correlation with that statistic and the amount of time that they spend on Facebook. Why? Because everything on Facebook, David and I joked a while years ago when it first came out that we should call it Two Facebook, because it's not the real face. I mean, you don't show what's really happening in your home. You show, you know, and so what you see on social media is you see pictures of people, profile pictures, you know, with the pouty lips. And, you know, airbrushed and all the flaws taken out. And that's what they see. And the reality is even though they create that picture to post on social media, they know the truth. Because the mirror doesn't do that for us. And so we see all these pretty people. We see the wonderful vacations that people are taking. And then we think, oh, what's wrong with my life that I can't take that vacation? Maybe they're in debt up to their eyeballs. They don't post that. Maybe their car is being repossessed. They don't post that. It's all this wonderful stuff, and we feel like, oh, we can't compete. There's something wrong with me. And it's beginning to affect teenage girls, not to mention all the bullying that's going on. And then we wonder why we have a mental health crisis. Because kids are growing up without being parented. They're learning all this stuff from social media. Now, I thought the ironic thing about this putting this whole message together was I did all of it via screen time. So there is some good. There is some benefits. These stats I took off of websites, there is some benefits. But largely, most of it is not good, is not necessary. Do you know how much time the average kid spends playing outside each week?
20 minutes?
A week? It's actually a little more than that. Because why? Well, at school, they probably get recess or they have gym class, so they might be outside for that. But it's about 5 hours, 5 to 8 hours a week that they're outside. They're inside. They're staring at a screen, which causes them to feel insecure, to begin to doubt who they are, how they were created. Why do we see all these teens coming out and questioning their gender? Well, I can't be pretty like those other girls. Maybe I was meant to be a boy. Or I can't be as masculine as all those boys, so maybe I was meant to be a girl. You say, well, Pastor, you're kind of far-reaching. Am I? And then you have all of these adults who have an agenda who say, oh, well, we need to train these kids how to change their gender. And we need to do all this gender-affirming stuff. They have an agenda. You know what it is? They want to pass how they feel onto somebody else, because what's the old saying? They say, oh, we do it because we care for the children. I'm sorry, you don't take a small child and mutilate their bodies because you care for them. It's because they're in pain and they're thinking, if we can just make the whole world like us, then everything will be okay. But listen to the stories and the testimonies of people who have gone through that and come to adulthood and realized that they destroyed their bodies and they are no more happy now than they were then. As a matter of fact, they're miserable. There's a big leadership void, and it's in the home. There's a big leadership void. It's among pastors. In the book of Deuteronomy, it instructs us in Deuteronomy 4:9, only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen, or let them fade from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. In Deuteronomy 11:18-19, it says, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit down and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. He's talking to the parents, and he's saying the responsibility is to teach your kids the things of God. He doesn't say it's the church's job. It's not the school's job. It's the parents' job. And so as a church, we have this responsibility. We have this tremendous opportunity to begin a ministry called Fathers in the Field. It's a ministry where we identify fatherless boys in our neighborhood, in our schools, and we begin to partner with the knowledge. We don't do it behind the single mom's back. We do it with her knowledge, with her blessing. As a matter of fact, we ask them if they want, and there's certain rules and boundaries that they have to follow for their child to participate. And these adult men come alongside these young boys, and it's a three-year commitment to these young boys to bring them to church twice a month and to do a service project with them once a month and to take them hunting or fishing or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be the outdoors. We call it Fathers in the Field, but it can be, are you a basketball player? Find a kid, teach him how to play basketball. Baseball, just toss a ball around. I don't want to say video games, but there may be a place for that. We have this opportunity, and next Sunday night, those of you, you should get an invitation this week to those of you that have been a part of this process. We're having a training next Sunday night. If you're new to this and want to get on board, then please come and talk to me about it. And there, it's not just guys, but it's men and it's women, because we're going to put together a whole team to make this happen. And then once a year, we'll have a celebration, a yearly celebration. We'll celebrate what's happening in the lives of these young boys. I started a couple of weeks ago attending a men's Bible study. I really enjoyed it. The Heart of a Warrior is what it's called. I'm going through book one. I think there's five books, something like that. Realizing that, you know, we lead people to Christ, and then we tell them you need to become a disciple. How many of you were ever taught how to become a disciple? How many of you could describe for somebody else what it means to be a disciple? Not very many of us. Why? Because what do we say? You're a Christian. You got to give your life to Christ so you can go to heaven. And now you got to come to church and make sure you give, because we want to support all this. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But we haven't really taught discipleship. We haven't taught parents how to parent. We haven't taught men how to be men using the Word of God. We just let it happen. And so the world has stepped up and filled that void. And that's why we're in the shape that we're in. I've said some tough things, and I know that can, you know, maybe cause some hurt feelings or whatever. God's grace is big. And maybe you're here as a parent and you realize, hey, I haven't done the best. That's okay. Talk to God about it. And then maybe I would encourage you to maybe go talk to your child, your son or daughter, and say, hey, I'm sorry. I wasn't always there like I should have been. I didn't necessarily do everything right. But I'm here now. And maybe God is calling you to say, to take a second chance and father somebody else to come alongside a single mom who's who has a boy growing up in the home without a dad. And we can talk you through that process and how that works. It's great. It's not just, and I would not encourage you to just take it upon yourself and say, oh, I'm going to go do this. Because there's a lot of things that can happen that aren't healthy and aren't good. So you need to do it through the church, through this process of accountability, where everything's on board and above board. But maybe God's calling you to do that. Maybe it has nothing to do with young boys. Maybe it's, I want to disciple some women. I want to teach them how to be a true disciple. Maybe I want to help some young moms. Maybe I can share with them some of the mistakes I made, and maybe we can turn the tide a little bit. It'll mean stepping out of your comfort zone. It'll mean being vulnerable. It'll mean giving up some of your time. Maybe just spend a few hours less on Facebook or whatever and do this. But the world isn't going to change unless the church and unless the parents and the people in the church begin to change and do what is on the heart of God.